When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, all you dog-loving peeps. Tom Davis here, America's canine educator. Welcome back to the top-charting, award-winning. Lakota knows this podcast time. She's wiggling in her crate. I'm sure you guys can hear it. Lakota, couche. Good. Stay. So anyway, guys, sorry about that. She comes in on the intro on cue sometimes, but today we have an awesome podcast. This is something that a lot of people deal with, living in cities, living in environments where there's common areas with other dogs and other people. This is one of those situations where there's an elevator involved and we have a really reactive dog in a really small space and we're using equipment, but it's not working and we're trying to figure out what to do. And this dog owner actually asked a lot of questions that I think they're really good questions. And it's like, hey, if this doesn't work, then what do I do? If this doesn't work, then what do I do? So it really kind of gives, I mean, you guys are reaping the benefits of this free podcast of how many different layers you can start to use and what to do if these things don't work. So it's like, it's really good on reactivity. It's good on the other questions that we go over is leaving the dog home and when, how much crate time and exercise, and it's all good. It's all really good information. Really quick before I let you guys listen to this podcast is, first thing is there's still some audit spots for my UK seminar. If you guys are interested in coming to watch me and hang out with me in the UK in a couple weeks, in October 1st, 2nd, and 3rd, I'll leave the tickets and all the description in the link below. You guys can click that. And if you guys don't know yet, we have an official No Bad Dog Members Club. It is a tight-knit, supportive, empowering, inspiring, motivating community. And what we do, guys, is we put in all the podcasts that are unreleased. We also put in full-length videos. So the videos that you guys see on YouTube, they're 10, they're 15 minutes. You might get a lot of good information, but as you guys know, it doesn't take 10 to 15 minutes to train a dog. On the No Bad Dog Members Club, there's the full-length video. Sometimes it's an hour or more, and it's really every single piece of information that goes in to get the result that we do that you guys see on the YouTube videos. There's also, I think the biggest thing, guys, is just a community, a place where you guys can go and safely ask questions without worrying about getting bombarded by trolls on the internet. And it's a really special place and I'm really excited and I'm really spending a lot of time in there. So anyway, that's in the link in the description below if you guys want to join that. Let's get into the podcast.
I've seen some of your videos. I really like the work that you do.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
You're doing some good stuff. Yeah. You know, I see so much stuff out there where it's like only positive or only like hardcore negative. And it seems like you have a good balance of both from an outsider's perspective.
Well, thanks. Yeah, I try to. I mean, that's just the way I think life should be. It's the way I've always worked with my dogs and it's the way I teach. And I'm glad people are enjoying it, catching on to it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it just like makes the most sense.
Yeah, for me, yeah, and a lot of people. Yeah, I would agree.
Definitely. So I got, so I have two dogs. I have a 18-month husky mix, Pebbles.
Pebbles?
Yep, and she is a rescue. Just a little background information. And then the one that I have the issue with is Karma. She is 14 months. And just a little background so you know, I'm not sure how much it matters or doesn't matter, but she was, she's also a rescue. Mm-hmm. She's a Malinois, German Shepherd, are the Bulldog, and like probably three or four other mix, but mostly Malinois and German. She looks like a Malinois, a black Malinois.
Okay.
And she is 45 pounds, so she's on the smaller side for that kind of dog.
Got it.
She also is a rescue, so she was found like in the bushes, ended up at the Miami-Dade Animal Rescue, was adopted. The people thought she was a lab, and then they returned her. And then my fiance and I ended up adopting her. So she had a chaotic early months, I guess I could say.
Sure.
And she's spayed. And she appears to have a lot of either anxiety, or she's trying to resource guard us or protect us, one of the three. And our two biggest issues are we live in a high rise in Miami on the 11th floor, so we take the elevator a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And if we go in the elevator with nobody in it, we have no problem. But as soon as someone steps in, she barks in a scary way towards them and lunges at them. Or somebody's waiting at the bottom of the elevator to, like, when we're going to depart the elevator and someone else can get in, she'll also bark, like, very loud and aggressive and lunge at them. She's never bit anybody. And good. I don't know if she would or wouldn't. And then also on the street, if we're walking her and we walk past somebody, we can walk past somebody, like, an inch next to us, and she has no problem. But as soon as they say one word to us, or, like, want to talk to us or communicate to us, she does the same thing, like a very loud, aggressive bark and lunge. And the area we're in is like very, very heavily populated. So it's almost impossible to avoid people. It's like very, very dense city.
Right. Okay.
So those are our two biggest issues. She is on a prong collar. We've tried everything. We've tried a harness. We've tried a prong collar. We've tried a slip lead, if I'm pronouncing it right, like a rope.
Yeah.
And well, not. I did that after watching some of your videos.
Cool.
And our other dog also is on a prong collar.
Okay.
And once Karma like starts barking, it's almost impossible to calm her down with food, or even like if I yank on it hard or not hard, or food in her face. Once she gets going, it's impossible to stop her. Inside, when no one's around, she's like very sweet. Just loves to like hang out, no problem. Not barking inside the house. Like no issues inside her comfort zone.
Okay, cool. And this is Karma, right?
Karma, yep.
Okay. So she has stranger danger almost, like she's lunging, barking, reacting. Now, okay. So, one question I have is obviously like that's, you're trying to correct the behavior. Everything that you're doing isn't working. One thing I will say is proper usage of the equipment, whether it's a slip, prong, whatever, and yeah, proper size. Those are the things that matter the most. So making sure that those things are fit properly and being used properly. So
I guess I was just going to say, so a point to that. So on the prong, it seems like it's definitely too large of a size right now. It slips down her neck.
Okay.
But the size down seems like it's like really, really too tight. It seems like she's almost in between, or maybe it should be on the tighter one. I know everything I see says don't let it slip down.
Right.
And then one other point. Oh, yeah. So one other point I wanted to make also I didn't mention before is she did two separate board and trains. Mm. So her commands are very strong. The board and trains were in a rural area, so not in a dense or city at all.
Right.
They had nothing to do with an elevator. So on their rural, wasn't a farm, but kind of farm area compared to where we are, she was perfect. Sit down, stay calm, whatever you want. Walking perfect. And then once the people come, it's a whole different story.
Okay. Got it. Understood. So with the prong, you probably have a 3.0 and then a 2.25. So with the 2.25, you can actually add links in,
yeah,
which is nice. So you can add links in to make it a little bit bigger. So if it's just like, if you can put the prong collar over the dog's head without taking it off, that's too big. Like I had somebody do that earlier today.
Oh yeah. We're not that big.
Yeah. Okay, good. So I would say if it's a little too snug, with the 2.25, I would just order or get another one and then just add a link or two in until you get that nice snug fit. Cause if it is sliding down and it's a bigger collar, Because I think you said Karma's smaller. She's like 45 pounds, right?
Yeah.
So if it is sliding down and it's not fit properly and it's a bigger unit, which means it's a, you know, 3.0 or something, it's not going to work. It's just going to, it's going to slide down. It's not going to give you that correction that you need. So that's the first thing I would do is get yourself, just order another 2.25 and just pop some links in and just see if you can custom. Okay. Yeah. See if you can customize that size to make it, appropriate. That'll make a huge difference. And then what are you doing? So walk me through. So you're on an elevator, Karma's with you, your prong collar's on, the door opens, somebody's there, she starts to bark. What do you do?
So I put her in the down position, and if someone's already in the elevator, I'll just take the next one now.
Right.
And kind of just walk back a little bit. But if we get on and then someone else enters, right now I have her in a down position, and if someone gets on, I'm trying to like give her a whole bunch of treats. And then I'll put my fiance kind of in the middle of the elevator to block the view of the other person.
Mm-hmm.
And then she really scares the people in the elevator. So
sure.
I guess I've tried like a correction, I guess you would call it, like a snap of the leash, I guess. I don't know if I'm saying it right.
Yeah.
But most of the time, I guess I'm just like pulling, like keeping her head and pulling the leash up. So her head and her sort of like she's on her back two legs and her head is just like away from the people.
Yeah.
But like with a decent amount of force to it.
Okay. So what you want to do is you want to do more of a pop than a pull. Right now you're kind of like pulling up and you're lifting her up off the ground and that's not going to be effective. So you want to actually pop the collar. So let me show you with like this prong here. Like I have a Herm Springer 2.25 right here.
Oh, that's a 2.25. Okay.
Right.
I wonder if I show you which one I have, if you would know what size it was.
I should be able to.
Kind of smaller. This is the larger size.
Okay. Yeah. So the smaller one's probably the 2.25 then, right? It's like, is it like mine?
Oh no. What I was saying is if I take a link out of this one, it seems like it's too tight on her neck.
Got it. I see what you're saying.
Or if I keep it like this, it seems like it's too big.
Got it. I thought you were saying that you had two. I thought you said you had two collars. So yeah, I would. Yeah, so you're just in between sizes. If you keep it like that, it kind of slides down, and if you take one out, it's a little too tight.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
I would just get the Herm Springer 2.25 size. That's a 2.25 gauge.
Is there a good spot online you would recommend buying that from? I feel like Amazon's got a bunch of fakes on it.
Chewy, usually, sure. Chewy has authentic ones. We usually have them. Let me see. We might have them. Let me just go to my website, buynobaddogs.com. Let me see if we have them.
What's the website?
BUY, nobaddogs.com. That's like where all my merch and safety clips and everything is. I want to see if we have any, but anyway, so what I would suggest is getting that. Chewy has them. We don't have any online. We have them at the facility, but we don't have any online. But Chewy has them. And I would just get, and Learberg probably has them. Some other places probably have them. But you're looking for like a dog training supply company. I mean, Amazon does get hit with some false ones mimicking Herm Springer. Yeah. So anyway, that's what I would do. Get a 2.25. Okay. And then, again, if you watch the prong collar correction, I have a lot of videos on this too. If you're watching the prong collar correction, you're popping this like this. Right. So you're popping that, instead of pulling. So right now you're kind of pulling up and you're pulling her up and she's on her back feet and she's probably like stressed about that. And then you just let her down or whatever. What you want to do is correct her for the behavior. So you're going to tell her to leave it and you're going to pop the collar like this.
Yeah.
Hear that?
And what if she keeps barking and lunging if I pop it?
Well, obviously you want to do the best you can to stop the barking. It would be very odd. And, I just don't see a lot of dogs completely ignoring that correction. If you do it right, if it's fit properly and you do it right. I find that it's very successful, but if they do, just try to move around a little bit. I know it's an elevator, right? But the other thing that you can do, is obviously motivation. So If the dog, if karma's reacting, you say, leave it, correction, leave it, correction, leave it, correction, right? That's something that you can do. And then if she makes a good decision and she stops barking, or when she stops barking and gets hysterical, she stops being hysterical, you can pay her immediately after to help her understand positive reinforcement and things like that. But realistically, some dogs just don't give a crap about positive reinforcement when they're upset or when they feel threatened, right, or they feel vulnerable or whatever. It just doesn't do anything. And of course, when you're working with positive reinforcement, it's to encourage behaviors. And as she's barking, we're not encouraging that, so we're not going to use that. We're going to correct when she does bark, and then we're going to reward her when she stops and say, "Good, leave it." If this is something that, I mean, obviously I work with, well, I don't, not obviously, but I work with people all over the world, and obviously you live in a city that is got a lot of, you know, a lot of stuff going on, and there's a lot of people. Some people don't ever see anybody, you know, so for you, it's something that your relationship and your daily experience with your dog is struggling, suffering, and it's not fun, and I'm sure it creates anxiety and stress and everything for everybody, yourself, your dog, the people. So some other alternatives is like, right, I have my own remote collar from Dogtra. So it's the Tom Davis 280C with Dogtra. That particular unit has a pager on it, so it's a vibrate, and it's got an HPP, which is a high performance pager. So it's got stimulation, right, which is normally what we train with recall and just conditioning and tuning up obedience and things like that. But it also has the HPP, which is a high-performance pager, which is also a great opportunity to discourage unwanted behaviors with less physical conflict and with you know, whatever.
Is the HPP a more intense vibrate?
Yes, it is. Yeah. That's exactly what it is.
I'll find it on your website.
Dogtra.com actually has those. We're not shipping them yet. We just came out with it a couple weeks ago, so we don't have any warehouse volumes yet, but we will in the future.
Yeah.
But yeah, cool. So that gives you an
that's
opportunity.
A cool collab.
Yeah, thank you, man. Appreciate that. We worked really hard on it. It's a beautiful collar. But it'll give you an opportunity to actually correct the dog. It gives you an opportunity to correct the dog with the pager and discourage the behavior. And look, like, I want the e-collar to mean great things for your dog. And that's what it is for the majority of dogs that we work with. It's this very fun, motivating, off-leash thing. Like, you know, you grab your coat, you grab your collar, your dog's like, oh my God, this is so exciting. That's what I want it to be for most people. But at the same time, you're dealing with a dead end situation here where you're like, hey, I have to bring my dog outside 2, 3, 4, 5 times a day, first thing in the morning, last thing at night. And we are running into severe issues that is going to cause you, you know, all sorts of problems. And so, there's what I call an intervention stage with the remote collar. And the intervention stage is exactly how it sounds, where, like I said before, when I usually introduce the remote collar, it's actually using low level stimulation, introducing all that stuff to the dog. And it's a very nice stimulating, control that you have with your dog. It's great. Dogs love it. It's a very positive experience. And so, but then there's the intervention where it's like, we need to stop this behavior. We need to stop it now. You don't have the ability, because some people honestly can't get that snap with the prong. You just can't. Like, you know, if you watch my videos, you'll see people struggle with it, you know, and their timing is off or their pop is off. It's not easy. It's really not.
Yeah.
As easy as it looks, or as easy as I make it look, or other trainers make it look, it's not as easy as it looks. It really isn't. So my point is if you can't effectively distribute that correction to a point where the dog understands it, respects it, to a point of modifying the behavior, because that's the ultimate goal, is we want to just say, leave it, which means, hey, don't bark. You're good. The person comes in, they make a good decision. You pay them for not barking, and they go, oh, this is a much better decision. And the person that just came into the elevator actually isn't a threat, and I really don't care about it.
Right.
But
do I need to introduce leave it to her, or can I just jump right into something I don't like?
Right.
And start saying it and correcting her.
Yeah.
And rewarding her.
Yeah, no, I understand. Well, I'd like to say, you want to introduce any type of obedience out of the context of using it as a punishment, so it's fair. But yeah, like I said, I mean, I find myself to call myself a realistic, you know, dog trainer. I mean, what's realistic and what's like, yeah, absolutely like that, this would be nice. This would be ideal, but we don't always deal with ideal scenarios. So, yeah, totally. You know, it is what it is. I mean, and that's the reality. That's where you're going to see results. That's where you're yielding results with problematic situations and reality. And so this kind of falls under that, again, that intervention stage with the e-collar. And
what was the Dogtra model that you recommended? So I can write it down.
It's the Tom Davis 280C. It's the No Bad Dog unit. You'll see it. If you go to dogtra.com, you'll see it. It's the 280C by Tom Davis, which is
me. Cool. And then the
2.25 Hermspringer. Yep. Yep.
I put her on a couple or a few mini educator.
Yeah.
Dog e-collar training for recall.
Yeah.
And she caught on really fast to it.
Good. Yeah, that's good.
So I don't know how to build on that. It was a long time ago.
Yeah, right. I didn't realize that you've done e-collar training, so that's helpful. But you can use the stimulation, because usually when we do recall, it's just like low-level stimulation to get the dog's attention. They come to you and they get paid. I mean, that's in a nutshell, that's what e-collar training is. But I think if you're comfortable with correcting her with that stimulation, you can. But I just like using the pager because it's a little bit more straightforward. You don't have to worry about what level you're at, because e-collars don't have levels of vibrate. It's just one level. So the e-collar technology is the same thing. That has just one level. But it doesn't have the HPP. That doesn't have as intense of a vibrate. But anyway, you could try it. Certainly try it, see if it works. But what you're going to do is, again, to answer your question of should your dog no-leave it before using it, ideally, yes. Realistically, if you walk into an elevator and your dog's losing their mind and you have a decision to make of, I either go with the ideal training solution and model, or you just say, I can't enable this to continue to happen and it's a liability and I need to punish it right now. And then that's where you would use like the pager. And again, that's what I would call like the intervention e-collar introduction, where I have dogs that are trying to physically hurt me pretty bad and I'm standing behind a counter and I use the e-collar as a correction, and it completely corrects them to a point where they're like, okay, this is uncomfortable and I really don't want to do this ever again. I'm like, great, because now we can move on and we saved your life and, you know, we can teach you some new things now. So,
and then a dog with anxiety, is there a risk of giving her more anxiety by using the e-collar? Or
sure, there's always a risk of if anything introducing to a dog of becoming. But again, if you're doing there's two parallels to this. If you're doing the e-collar properly in this intervention stage and you're clear about what behavior you're trying to get rid of, the dog should understand that the reactivity that they're exhibiting is actually turning the remote collar on. It's not coming from a random place. It's you and it's the reactivity. It's never going to happen outside. If you're chilling and you're being good and nothing happens and you're being obedient and you're not reacting and you're not losing your mind, you're good. Nothing happens. But then as soon as they react, again, like you have to pick your battles of, okay, so say one out of stress is part of dogs' lives. I mean, I'm so sick of people like not understanding that you should always train without stress. That's not possible. It's very hard to do. Even if you take food away from a dog after training, they're stressed about it. They're like, where'd it go? What did I do wrong? Right. So you have to, like, 1 through 10, right? Your dog reacts negatively, gets stressed, freaks out. You get stressed. Your fiance gets stressed. The person that walked into the elevator gets stressed. You know, they call the management. It's like this whole thing. So you got to scale that and you got to audit that. Okay, that's probably a stress level of a 7.5 to 8. Like, that sucks. It's sucky for everybody. But if you're using the correction on a dog and it's creating stress over behaviors we want to discourage, and it's maybe like 5% stress out of 10, you got to pick your battles and say, well, I'd rather make my dog a little stressed over behaviors I actually want them to be stressed about doing because I don't want it to happen again, versus all the stress that's going to be created about enabling and not doing anything.
Yeah, totally. That makes sense. And then when and if Karma could get trained with the e-collar, Mm-hmm. Will she only exhibit those behaviors if she has it on, or?
Yeah, great question. And that's what I was saying before, is it's your job to really cue it from your voice. So think about conditioning, right? When we think about dog conditioning, we think about when you grab your keys, your dog goes, oh, we're going somewhere. You grab your leash, oh, we're going somewhere. You grab your coat, you say walk. They're so good at routines. They're so good at cueing. They're so good at conditioning. They're like, I know what this means. So, and same thing with positive reinforcement. You say sit, the word sit comes out of your mouth. They don't know English. They just know when you say sit and they put their butt on the ground, they get paid with something. That's conditioning. Yeah. That's okay. I get this. So I've done this a long time, and I've done it long enough to know that it's just as powerful using it with things we want to discourage. So my point is if you say sit and the dog sits and then you pay them, well, in the future, you want the dog to sit with or without that motivation or without that encouragement. Same thing with punishment is when you say leave it, I mean, you should be able to get your dog to sit without food, just like you should be able to get your dog to leave it without an actual reinforcer. So,
makes sense.
So yes. So if you do it right, leave it, leave it, right? It's conditioning. Somebody rings the doorbell, there's somebody here. So they realize that the leave it is then reinforced and followed up with a correction that is actually holding the dog accountable for creating a way more stressful situation than actually getting corrected. So if you do it right, the answer is your dog should just do it. But again, it's like, you know, if you don't wear your seatbelt, it's like, what could happen? I always tell people, like, we put our seatbelts on every day just because we don't know what's going to happen.
Right.
And it's not so much about... Yeah, so that's what I like to tell people is when you go out and you get into an elevator and the one day you forget something that'll actually help you in a power steering environment, you're going to have a circus go into the elevator and you're going to be like, yep, today's the day. God damn it,
yeah.
You know? So anyway, so, you know, I like to tell people if you're doing it right, they should just listen. Go ahead.
So I was just going to say, so what would like a good cadence be? I get in the elevator, I put her in a down. Somebody comes into the elevator.
Yeah.
I see her kind of getting a little antsy.
Yeah.
And I know the bark and lunge comes next.
Well, that's one thing I've been meaning to talk to you about is I don't necessarily think that you should be putting her into a down either, because I think with a little space like the elevator and putting her into a down, I think may make things worse. I think it'll put her into a vulnerable situation. I think it could make things worse for her because she again feels vulnerable because she's now in a down. And if this is something stemming from fear, which it sounds like it is, or insecurity or just lack of socialization or all of the above, if you put her into a down, that immediately puts her into a vulnerable position. And what I would be doing, to be honest, is I would be using the corner of the elevator and just almost body blocking her, not hiding her, not like covering her eyes. You're just karma, sit, put her into a sit. Yes, good sit. You pay her with the treats in your pocket. So I think a sit would be a little bit more
and now
better.
Like probably 85% of the time I tell her to sit, she'll go into a down position. She's like a constant down.
Well, I think because usually they it comes in a circus. I call it the circus. So you probably usually go sit and then down, sit and then down. Or and that's common, or it's something that maybe she feels comfortable in and she's going into a down out of instinct, which again, like you want to actually take her out of that because that's where she's making mistakes. She's becoming vulnerable. And so you got to play around with that a little bit. That's like part of dog training and handling is getting creative as a handler. And, I think that's what I would do.
Okay, cool. And then at what point would I snap or hit the high vibrate? Would it be when she starts getting antsy or as soon as she barks?
I would mark, you know, again, think about positive reinforcement. As soon as the dog does the exact behavior that you want to encourage to happen again, that's where you pay. It's the same thing with positive punishment. It's as soon as she does the thing that you really are trying to get away from. But again, you got to realize that there's a lot of external what I would call involuntary behaviors. So like becoming a little bit whiny, like you got to pick your battles. Like if she loses her mind and she goes crazy and she's whining a little bit instead of reacting, again, you got to like pick what you're going to shut down and what you're not. So I think just having a little bit of leeway there is going to be discretionary on you.
Okay. And then in your opinion, if she starts going into a high anxiety barking at lunch and then the vibrate doesn't work?
Well, I think you would need to go into work with, you need to hire a professional to come into the elevator and help you. I know that doesn't help you right at this moment, but if like I've been using these tools and working primarily with these types of cases for my entire career, and it's something that has really good success, and any time that it fails the majority of times it fails is because it's something you're doing wrong. Like again, if I were to say, I'm using the prong collar, it doesn't work. And then you already told me that you're just basically hanging her with the prong. So that makes sense, right? Same thing with the pager. If the pager is not hooked up right, or it's not on, or it's not charged, or it's not sitting against the skin and has good contact, it's not going to work either. So I think if you're going through all the rounds of using the punishment and using it effectively and you feel like it's still not working, there's something going on with you. You need help with that. But I also think too, to that regard, if I was in front of you, I would say, well, the elevator is the biggest challenge. That's the biggest, hardest task. That's the big game. But we need to go to practice. We need to go to the practice field a little bit and maybe get around some of these people in a less invasive way for her to make her a little bit more comfortable. Practicing the reward systems. If she's food motivated, make sure you're paying her on time. So if she sees somebody and she makes a good decision, or she comes close with somebody and she makes a good decision, yes, good, leave it. Bang, you pay her. So I think kind of circling around the elevator scenario too is important. Don't just go from we're really struggling with this and we keep hitting it hard and it's not working. Like that's going to continue to happen unless you pull out of that area and go back to the practice field and really reevaluate.
That makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense. That's good.
And you can find, you know, the way that your elevator is set up. Maybe you go into the lobby where the elevators are there, but you're not in the elevator and you're not directly right by the doors. You're maybe far off. She's hearing the ding. She's seeing people come out.
Right.
You're just sitting there basically in the morning feeding her breakfast if she does well. And I think that will also help, because if it is stemming from fear and it's stemming from maybe again socialization, desensitization, insecurity, what do I do? And you're like, hey, I'm giving you a really clear option here. If you react, you're gonna get in trouble and it's gonna be uncomfortable.
Yeah.
If you just chill and you're suspicious, I'm gonna pay you. Now, one thing I've been finding with a lot of my reactive dogs recently is and a lot of this is because they trained with other people, and you know, this is just my opinion on this, is don't correct her for looking.
Right.
Like if she's trying, if she's trying to make a better decision to say, hey, who are you? And then bang, she gets corrected. She never has an opportunity to get better. So make sure that you're very cautious about when you're applying that pressure, because there is going to be a moment, and it'll come, where she does make that decision to not react and you're going to have an aha breakthrough. But if you're always correcting proactively, it's never going to happen. She's always just going to be shutting down.
Yeah. Oh, that makes sense. That makes total sense. When you walk two dogs, do you walk two-handed or one-handed?
One-handed.
One-handed with two dogs in one hand?
Yep.
Two leashes?
Yep.
Prong on each, one hand. And then how do you correct if one of them's a problem?
Or just... Well, yeah, it's kind of a trick question, you know, because you asked me how I walk my dogs, and that's how I walk my dogs. So
I guess how would you suggest I should do it?
Yeah.
I should say.
Yeah. Well, a couple things. You gotta get to where you need to be first. So practicing with them individually on the heel command. Like if you don't spend a considerable amount of time individually with your dogs on heel, you can't expect them to A, go out and heel with each other, because that's a huge distraction. And B, you can't expect them to actually do something they're really not good at in a very challenging environment of reality. So you really have to pull back and ask yourself and really audit, If I tell either one of the dogs, Pebbles or Karma, to heal, what is the realization of them actually understanding and capturing and, you know, fulfilling that versus like nagging? Like if you're out and you're like, heal, 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 heal. Your dog doesn't know heal. So you just have to,
Right.
So to answer that question fairly on my end is you really have to audit how well your dogs know heal. Cause if it's half-assed and you go out and you're like, let's get distraction one, which is your pack member, if you will. All right. That's a huge distraction. And then, okay, now let's go outside. That's the biggest distraction. So again, like you have to be really prepared before you enter that arena of healing. So you can't, does that make sense?
Yeah. Can we talk through healing a little bit?
Absolutely. Yeah.
How to get them from a 6.5 or 7 to a higher.
Right. Yeah. So again, I think it comes back down to the foundation of what is heel. Heel is the dog walking loose leash at your heels. And that's going to be historically on the left side. That's just the proper side. If you want to go right, you can, but stay consistent. Keep the dog either on the left or the right. And practice this. Like, so say you have a hallway. Hallway is best. You put the dog on the left side. You say, Karma, heel. You move forward. You have an invisible line that the heel is, right? Your dog is to really just stay at your heels. If their chest goes through past your knees, pop, pop. Or you can do heel or making sure that they stay in the heel. And you kind of give them, if they pass that imaginary line, you're not popping up, you're not pulling up, you're giving pressure, you're popping backwards, pop, 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 pop. Okay. Once they get back into a heel, yes, good heel. And you can use food, you can use motivation, you can use a ball, but you got to use some sort of positive reinforcement that once they're actually walking there, they're good. And one way that I proof that out is I slow down. I move forward and I slow down and I make sure the dog is engaged. I'll turn on my heels. I'll do a directional change. It's something you'll find in my YouTube videos all the time, is what I call a tune up or a calibration. Pay attention to me, pay attention to me. And then you work what I call the 3 Ds: distance, distraction, and duration. So you gotta each level you have to graduate to the next level. So for an example, if you're starting off with healing and you ask your dog to heal in your hallway, you're going to go to the end of the hallway and the distance is hallway to the end of the hallway. The distraction is very minimal because you're inside and your other dog is away while you're doing this. And the duration of how long you're doing it is 7 to 10 seconds, depending on how long your hallway is. And then each level, you're leveling up. Okay, now we're moving away from the wall and I'm healing you from the front door to the hallway to back to the front door. A to B, back to A, et cetera, et cetera. So your 3 Ds always evolve into different steps and you don't go to the next step until you've really graduated off of the one you're on. Having the break command is 100% crucial. It's like trying to drive a vehicle with no fuel. Doesn't work. You have to have a brake command to in order for the heel or any behavior to actually capture.
So if we were going for like, let's say a short 3 or 4 block walk, and I've trained her or at least partway through my training with heel, how often on that walk should I keep her in a heel command compared to like just let her be free?
Yeah, good question. So it really just depends on your healing, how good it is. Like I don't know. So
right now it's not the best.
Right. So you would maybe look, so you take one dog out and you would heal that dog from, you would heal that dog 10 steps break.
Yeah.
And then give the dog a break.
Okay.
And then the dog would break for 5 minutes, sniff around, be a dog. You'd say, Karma, heal. You heal Karma for 12 seconds. So on and so forth.
Okay, cool. So less.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, that's good. Yeah, some people are like keeping their dog, or trying to keep their dog in a heel like for 24/7, it seems like, in Miami.
Right. And it's unrealistic and unfair, and you're going to fail, and you're going to be frustrated, and your dog is going to be frustrated. So have really clear lines.
Heel. It seems like it.
Right.
It seems like it with it.
Yeah. Heel, break. Heel, break.
Or not even fun to be a dog. You got to be in heel all the time, I guess.
Right. And they're just going to break it because they're not going to be able to do it because it's like it feeds itself. They're not going to do it because they don't know it. And you're going to give up, and you're going to get frustrated, and you're never going to do it again. So you heel break. But you start heel off, you know, as a seedling inside, you know, by yourself. And then you can adapt.
That makes sense. I got Pebbles. When I leave the house, she could roam free. Nothing happens. Mm-hmm. Karma, if she's not in her kennel or her cage, she will destroy something.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something you think she'll grow out of, or should I just keep her in the kennel when I leave, or what's your kind of thoughts on I leave Pebbles out, but Karma's got to be in the kennel?
I think some dogs just lose privileges of that freedom because they get themselves into trouble. That's why crating is very safe and more safe than leaving a dog out if they're going to get into things that could potentially harm them or cost you thousands of dollars, which ultimately can damage and ruin your relationship with your dog and, you know, your fiance and your landlord and, you know, whatever. The list goes on. So you just have to pick your battles. You know, some things to consider why dogs don't do well in crates is A, they've never been in one, and it's being overused, and maybe you should be feeding them in the crate and paying them in the crate and leaving the crate door open and letting them go in there when they want. And then the other thing is just exercise. Like if a dog is, you know, alternatively to just leaving them in the crate, if you left them out and they were tired, sometimes they sleep instead of, like, if you wake up, say you wake up at 6 a.m., you got to be to work at 8, you let them out to go pee and poop, you bring them back right back in, and then you leave and they tear up the house, or Pebbles tears up the house. Well, that's likely, because if you have a dog that needs a job, which, like you said, is Pebbles the Mallee mix, or is that the Husky?
The Husky.
Okay, so the Husky gets into trouble because the Husky gets bored. You know, that's not enough. So there's a lot of that too. You know, hiring a dog walker helps, bringing your dog to daycare a couple of times a week helps. And then just carving out time in the morning to just exhaust the dogs to A, make it fair when you put them in the crate and they sleep and it's a win-win. Or B, if you want to try to leave your dog out in an X pen somewhere in your house, at least they've expelled some energy. So they're not running around the house trying to figure out what they can dig up.
Yeah, that makes sense. She's actually really good in the crate. I was just wondering, at some age, should I break her on that? Or she's not in there often, you know, if I leave the house or whatever.
Yeah.
She goes to daycare a lot, at least 3-4 days a week.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, I mean, if she's great in the crate and you let her out and she makes a mess, it's a no-brainer.
Yeah, like, okay, cool.
She's better in the crate, and she'd probably rather be in the crate. She doesn't get in trouble.
She's cool in the crate. I saw the dog treadmills that you have. Are we good on time still? If not, just...
No, you're good, yeah. Totally.
Yeah. The dog treadmills you have, is that something you would suggest?
Yeah, they're great. They're great for everybody. They're great for, they're great. Especially if you live in a busy city where it's kind of you got to get dressed and you got to get outside. You're going to see people. It's like this whole thing of like, I don't really want to go out for a walk at 10 o'clock at night. It's hot out, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Especially in Miami.
Yeah.
I went there once. Oh my God. So hot.
Yeah, so hot.
It's uncomfortable.
And hurricane season.
Yeah. But I mean, they're great and they're well worth it. I mean, it's one of the best investments you can make for your dog, especially if you have the time, if you work from home or you have a lot of time, you know, you just pop them on the treadmill while you're doing emails, while you're on calls. I mean, it's a beautiful thing and it's a win-win because you're getting that exercise out that they need daily and they're excited and they're happy because they're getting that exercise that they need daily. And then you just, you know, let them out to go pee and poop. And that is so much better than, I mean, if you're going to live the city life, you have to adapt to, okay, we don't have an acre for the dogs to run around in their fenced yard. We live in a big pillar and you're going to have to do the best you can to expel that energy.
Yeah.
So I love them.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of good stuff. I appreciate all the help.
Heck yeah. No problem.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.